When we think of writers in colonial America, New Englanders like Cotton Mather and Ben Franklin come to mind, but recently discovered essays by an anonymous Southern writer who called himself the humorist are now being hailed as some of the best in America's colonial period. Brent Kendrick teaches English at Lord Fairfax Community College. He thinks he's discovered the real identity of the humorist, but he's not saying just yet. And he joins me now to talk about the fun of reading this essayist. Brent, who is the humorist?
No one knows who the humorist is. I'm 99% certain that I know, so that's part of this project as well, to give the essays a really close reading and using internal clues identify the author.
Why would he do it anonymously?
Writers often did that during that time period. It was fairly typical. Benjamin Franklin, for example, wrote his Silenced Do-Good essays when he was 16. His brother was publishing those essays in the New England Courant, and even his brother didn't know that Silenced Do-Good was, in fact, Benjamin Franklin.
What would be the point of it?
It gives you a certain license. You can talk about politics. You can talk about what's going on in the community, and no one really knows who's saying these things.
Help me understand when The Humorist was published.
They started in November of 1753, and they ended in April of 1754.
Why do you think so short-lived?
That's part of the mystery. The humorist himself speaks to that in his last essay and says that for personal reasons, he will no longer be an author in the province. I think there were other reasons, and I'll be exploring that.
With me?
Not with you.
Oh.
That's part of my project. I have to keep the mystery in this.
True, but you could allude to some possible reasons.
One possible reason might be that he died.
And that he said a farewell?
That he said a farewell knowing that he was ill.
Could have moved away.
Could have moved away.
Could have been jailed.
Doubtful that he would have been jailed.
Could have been driven out of town on a rail?
I don't think so. The essays are too innocuous for that.
So he was certainly known to the editor to have been published anonymously.
Oh, he was known to the editor. If my conjectures are correct, the author was well known in England, exceedingly well known in Scotland, and exceedingly well known in Italy.
Possibly even heard of by me and others of my ilk?
Never. Well known in his day. He has slipped into oblivion. Sarah, let me read you parts from the very first essay that appeared in the Gazette on the 26th of November, 1753. He opens this one with the quote from Horace, which translated says, "And raise man's passions to what height they will." He continues, "If we make a retrospect into past times, we shall find that as the morals of people varied, so did their species of writing. In the days of monkish ignorance, romantic legends bore a universal sway. And in the happy times of good Queen Bess, the world was joyously entertained with fairyland and tales of chivalry." And so he's in a humorous way saying as his preface, "I'm going to make fun of other people and not make fun of myself. Thus have I cursorily run over the various tastes of mankind in the former ages, and therefore cannot avoid mentioning that reigning one of these days, novel writing without reason and lies without meaning." And I love that because the novel was a relatively new literary form at that point. And here we have the humorist saying that novels have no reason and give lies without meaning.
And this mysterious author wrote not just essays, right? He published other writings under the same pseudonym?
He did. He dabbled at poetry. They're not that good. Some are a little risque. Probably not appropriate to be aired. He also wrote letters to himself.
I'm curious about the unmentionable and unprintable poetry. Was that printed in its time?
It was printed.
What?
It was printed. It's not that risque.
Give me just a smidge of risque.
Give me one moment.
Yeah.
Let me find one. It's called Song by the Humorist. "As Damon one day with his fair one was sat, he talked pretty freely of this and of that. while he toyed on the green in negligence gay, and proverb-wise quickly began to make hay. Lord bless me, how rude! Such a man, I protest, is the plague of my heart and foe to my rest. No woman can bear such freedom as this, and the no shall henceforth take place of the yes. He whispered an accent so sweet in her ear, when she looked a smile, if smiles are sincere, but too soon to his grief, responsive echo gave, instead of the yes, a gentle no, no. Unskilled in the arts of Lucinda the gay, he soon discontinued his amorous play. She slighted him, too, for the women detest that a man should invert what's meant as a jest. Henceforth, ye fond lovers, who wish to obtain the thousand endearments oft sought for in vain, accept this advice, which the experienced all know, that a woman means yes whenever she says no. I'm surprised that that was there. It's refreshing to me. Again, it's a lighter, humorous take. But compared to his New England counterparts, wouldn't have been talked about. That's the key point, I think. Wouldn't have been talked about, yes.
So Southern society would have delighted in that?
I think Southern society would have delighted in that.
And New England society would have been outraged.
This would not have been appropriate to write about in a New England newspaper from that period.
Who else anywhere would write such a thing that gives you a clue as to where his muse was coming from?
That's an excellent question.
Right.
I can't think of a counterpart. That's why I like the essays. Let me share with you some essays that did appear in New England about 40 years earlier, 1710. These are written by Cotton Mather, one of the leading clergymen in New England. And he wrote a series of essays, a book actually called Bonifacius, an essay upon the good that is to be devised and designed. Here's how he started his essays, and it's markedly different. Sirs, an unfeigning resolution to do good and an unwearied well-doing is the thing that is now urged upon you. And may this little book now be so happy as herein to do the part of a monitor unto the readers of it. Essays to do good. Such glorious things are spoken in the oracles of our good God concerning them who devise good, that a book of good devices may very reasonably demand attention and acceptance from them that have any impressions of the most reasonable religion upon them. I am devising such a book, but at the time offering a sorrowful demonstration that if men would set themselves to devise good, a world of good might be done, more than there is, in this present evil world. So that sets the New England tone with
right.
the spirit of religion and introspection, and we're charged with doing good.
Did that appear in a newspaper?
It didn't appear in a newspaper, but it was staunchly anchored to the essay tradition that was very important to American colonists.
Before you began teaching at the community college level, for years you worked at the Library of Congress.
Yes.
Did that experience help you in your sleuthing?
Absolutely. I consider myself to be an information sleuth. During my years at the Library of Congress, I had a fabulous mentor, Sally Hambrick, who would drag me into the stacks, and she would say, information is never lost. It's just misplaced.
Well, this has been wonderful. Brent Kendrick, thank you for talking with me today on With Good Reason.
Thank you, Sarah. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Brent Kendrick teaches English at Lord Fairfax Community College. Since we originally broadcast this interview, Brent has confirmed and announced the identity of the humorist. His name is Alexander Gordon, and you can learn more about this elusive figure on Brent's website, thewiredresearcher.com. With Good Reason is made possible by the University of Virginia Neurosciences, whose multidisciplinary teams offer treatments for stroke, brain tumors, and brain conditions, uvahealth.com. You're listening to With Good Reason, produced by the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Elliot Majerzyk, Kelly Libby, and Allison Quantz are our associate producers. Andrew Windham is our executive producer. Jeannie Palin handles listener services. Visit us at withgoodreasonradio.org or download the podcast on iTunes. You can also find us on Twitter. The handle is @GoodReasonRadio. Or like us on Facebook. For a free copy of the show on a CD, call 877-451-5098. I'm Sarah McConnell. Thanks for listening.